Hello everyone and welcome to the latest special episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name's Scott Coyne. Regular listeners will know me as one of the Trident here at the BFP. I'll be your host for this special episode and we're absolutely delighted to be joined by our latest special guest. We haven't had one in a little while because we've all been busy on separate projects, so it's great to be able to welcome our latest one. And we're delighted to be joined for our latest special with a guest who's going to be joining us to talk about something really integral to football's infrastructure, quite literally, you might say. And I think it's something that we all probably take for granted as well. It's an absolute delight to welcome Ollie Macken, who is the head groundsman at Leuven. Ollie's been in charge of the turf at Den Dreef and Leuven's training grounds since the summer of 2018. And his role at Leuven includes overseeing, I think, four staff and five pitches, including Den Dreef, of course, which we all know, and the club's training pitches. Prior to coming to Belgium, Ollie spent time with Rochdale and Scunthorpe in the UK, as well as a period out in Qatar, which we'll hear a little bit more about. Ollie, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome you to the BFP.
Hello. I'm delighted to finally get on here. I know it took a bit of a long time to get on there, but obviously both of our schedules quite busy, but no, it's brilliant to finally be on the show.
Yeah, great. It's lovely to welcome you. Yeah, we've been trying to kind of pin this one down for a little while and had some false starts of different kinds. We've been trying to do this for a few months. Other podcasters will know that's one of the perils of recording with guests, working around these little quirks. In fact, we had one just the other day. We were due to sit down together and have a chat a few days ago, and then there was I think it was a late impromptu training session was called, wasn't it, Ollie, which required...
Yeah, as always, it's you never know with football schedules, but no, we're finally here and it's great to be speaking to you.
Yeah, let's dive in because, you know, as I was saying at the start, this is going to be focused on something that I think probably a lot of football people or on whatever side of the game they're from take for granted, and it's obviously something that you kind of live and breathe every day. Before we get kind of stuck into talking about some of the technicalities of turf maintenance and grass more generally, let me ask you a wee bit about kind of, you know what I mean, your own background and how you became a groundsman. How did your love affair with kind of grass and turf start?
It's a question that I still can't really answer properly. I've been asked it so many times. The only thing I can put it down to is my grandma and granddad always used to make me come out in the garden with them and, yeah, help in the greenhouse, cutting the grass. And then I've played cricket, yeah, ever since I can remember. And one of the lads who I played with, he was actually head groundsman at Rochdale Football Club and groundsman at the cricket club I played at. So one day he just asked me if I wanted to come down on a match day at Rochdale just to help him out, and not thinking that I'd end up doing it 15 years later. So I think that's where, obviously, I started at Rochdale one match day, and ever since then, yeah, I've never looked back.
So it was kind of a happy accident in a way.
Oh, definitely. It certainly wasn't a job that I even knew about, never mind thought to take a career into it. So, yeah, a good accident, though, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's like lots of things in life. It's funny that, isn't it? You know, your life changes, you know, just on an accidental whim like that. It's amazing what can happen. Let's kind of move on to kind of talking about some of the technicalities of grounds work, because I think it's probably a safe assumption that most football fans know probably very little about pitch maintenance, you know, how it works, what the routine's like, and what things are like for you on a daily basis. So why don't we do a little kind of beginner's guide to turf, if you will. Tell us a wee bit about the range of different surface types.
Yeah, I think, like you said, I think I was the same before I stepped foot into this career. And, you know, you turn up on a Saturday at 3 o'clock and the goals are in, the pitch looks good and the white lines are white, and you don't really think how it all comes together to get a pitch ready for a game. But basically, there's so many different technologies now in the industry. Obviously, from natural surfaces, just your standard grass pitches with no investment or anything like that. And then you start to go into more advanced technologies, like the reinforced pitches with fiber sand pitches, which have small plastic fibers in the sand. That reinforces it when the roots from the grass grow around the fiber, obviously makes the pitch a lot stronger. And then probably the last 15, 20 years have come in hybrid pitches. So they're stitched with plastic fibers up to 18 centimeters deep into the pitch, which again acts as a reinforcement as the roots from the grass grow around them fibers, and it literally just doesn't move. So gone are the days where you see back in the 80s and 90s, you know, these mud baths and big divots coming out of the, you know, big chunks of grass coming out of the pitches. Now it's, after a game of football, you can't really tell anybody's actually played on it. So there's so many different technologies, you could say, in pitches now. They have also, it's like a play and lay system. So that's reinforced with plastic fibres again, but it's just like a 40 mil thick turf, basically. That's just rolled down. And they say you can play on it the day after, but obviously, yeah, within a week it's playable. So there's just so many different technologies that are being used. And I'm sure over the next few years as well, other things will come out. But I think a lot of people think it's cut grass, mark the lines, put the goals in, but especially now, there's a lot more science involved.
Yeah, it's interesting that, because I think a lot of fans probably assume that most pitches are just grass that's kind of cut. And I think my perception of it is a lot of clubs obviously make choices based on their resources and their finances, and that tends to be what determines maybe what turf they work with at their ground and their training pitches. And then obviously when you get to kind of an elite level, wherever it is in Europe particularly, then sometimes, you know, particular coaches will demand a certain type of surface. It's interesting because when me and Ben and Joris were out in Belgium at the end of October, we spent a good day in Bruges with the team at Cercle Bruges, and while they were showing us around, we spent a little while out on their training pitch, and they've got a hybrid pitch there at the Jan Breydel as part of a number of pitches there. And I'll be honest, I actually just wanted to get down and rub my face in it.
Yeah, I certainly think, you know, and it does, it is something special when you see these pitches just immaculate. And I think especially just going back to us at OHL, it's, I think on a match day, come kickoff time and you see the pitch, you know, you've put all your effort in leading up to the game. I think that's just the highlight of the job, is seeing your efforts, yeah, on the TV, at the stadium, just to, I suppose, really show off the team skills of what they can produce on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I think it's really important that actually as well, isn't it? Because, you know, to attract the best players, then, you know, having a quality surface actually becomes really important. I mean, it's a different story if, for example, and there is only one side in Belgium that has a synthetic surface at the moment, and that's obviously St. Truiden. From a recruitment perspective, it must be slightly difficult at times to convince some players potentially to come and play there if they don't have a hybrid pitch or a pitch that is of a standard that perhaps you know elite players would expect.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a huge put-off really for players, you know, especially if they think they're going to play every other week on a synthetic pitch, and you know, you hear these players that can't actually train on them or play on them because of knee injuries. And don't get me wrong, I think 4G or synthetic has come a very long way since the old days. And then I remember Oldham Football Club used to have one which was sand-based, and I just can't imagine playing week in, week out on synthetic pitches. But I suppose I am going to say that, otherwise yeah, it put me out of my job. if everyone turned to synthetic. But don't get me wrong as well, I think you don't have to have a hybrid pitch to have a good pitch. Just need certain investment, because it might look nice on the top, but underneath is as important as how it looks at the top as well, because you have no drainage and it rains, then you have no football. Underneath is very important as well, investment-wise, as what, yeah, it might look nice and green on the top, but if you don't get the underneath right, then it's very difficult to keep the bit what you can see in good condition as well.
Yeah, you've got to be, you know, paid as much attention to the kind of structure that supports that. Yeah, that makes kind of complete sense. Just on hybrid pitches, while we were talking about them a little bit, What's the kind of main advantage from your point of view of one of them? Because I've spoke to a few people about this over the years, actually, and a lot of people, certainly at a coaching level, say that for them, the attraction is just the way that the ball moves. Because, you know, because of the sort of integrity of the surface, it affects it in just in a slightly different way.
I think you can trust the surface more than a natural surface because you know, yeah, a player plants his foot on the pitch, that's not going to move. Uh-huh. So certainly on a player's aspect, they trust it a lot more and they're free to do, yeah, whatever technical things they want to do without worrying about the surface ripping up under their feet. But from our point of view, I think it's a lot easier to maintain because you don't get you don't get any divots during play. It's just little scratches and which are a lot easier to divot than having to replace turf and things like that. You get longer longevity. Yeah, have I said that? Yeah, you get more playing hours also on the pitch. So as a club, it does cost a lot of money to install one at first, but over the years, it will pay for itself with more playing hours. Obviously, to a certain degree, it doesn't mean you can play on it every day, but it certainly gives you more options to use it for training, games, rather than just a natural playing surface, which wouldn't last. And also with a hybrid, you're pretty much guaranteed for 10 years. So it might cost you just, let's just say, €1 million to install with a proper construction underneath, but that is guaranteed for 10 years with just obviously each end of each season you do a standard renovation, which is basically just removing the grass, apply fresh sand onto the top and then reseed it, which is a fraction of the cost of obviously installing it. But you think over 10 years, €1 million, it's at most levels probably it's not that much money when you think about it in footballing terms.
Yeah, it makes sense, actually. You can see why, you know, more and more clubs are, if they can anyway, in investing in that. Tell us a wee bit about your kind of daily and sort of weekly working routine, what that's like. Tell us a wee bit more about, you know, you and your team.
Yeah, so I think you mentioned there's me and three other staff full-time. Then we have two volunteers at the training ground who've been there for, well, nearly since the club. Well, actually, before the club was formed, but they was there when the three clubs came together to create OH Leuven. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, our work depends, the majority of the time around the training schedules, the game, the fixture schedules. So, Monday to Friday would be training session at 10 o'clock, maybe one at 3 as well. So that just means we cut the pitch before the training session, do the white lines if it's necessary, and then after the training session, we'll repair the pitch, walking over it with forks and then using the rotary mowers, which basically just sucks up any loose grass or debris on the surface just to stop that getting washed into the surface, which then can create a problem with the drainage layer. Well. At the stadium, all down to the games, we work our fertilizer programs, wetting agents, etc., to when we're going to play. So in the summer months, we're cutting that pitch every day. And then the two days before a game, we'll double cut that. And then on the match day, double cut it again, just to present it as nice as possible. And then in between fixtures, we'll work with the aeration equipment. So basically punching holes into the pitch to get air down into the roots, which helps the drainage as well. And just creates a nicer atmosphere for the roots to because you want them as deep as possible to give you obviously as much strength as possible in the pitch. So that's really it. When you put it like that, it's quite simple. But all the fertilizer programs are done off soil readings, soil results analysis, and we set them before the start of each season. So we basically have a program. Obviously, it's weather dependent. We know when, where to apply the different products that we need to make that pitch as strong and as healthy as possible.
Yes, yeah, so there's definitely a huge amount of work there, and a lot of it is, you know, as you were saying earlier, kind of more and more influenced by this kind of science around that. What are the kind of sort of you know, good and bad elements for grass? What is grass like, and what's grass's enemy?
So the grass we use is 100% pure English ryegrass. which mm-hmm. once the temperatures start getting near 30 degrees, it really starts to struggle. So for an example, last summer we had a really hot summer, which was very challenging to keep the grass alive, never mind healthy. A lot of water. And the wetting agents now is a really, I still find it unbelievable how it works, but this is a product you can spray down on the pitch. And there's one that actually drags the water from the surface and one that keeps the moisture in the surface.
Uh-huh.
So obviously we use that a lot in the summer. And I think nice conditions is warm. I sound like a weatherman now, but warm sunny spells and a few showers. Uh-huh. That's what I tend to hear most on the weather because I don't think they know what's going on. But I don't know, 22 degrees, a few showers here and there and some sunshine would be ideal. But as a groundsman, we're never happy with the weather. It's either too dry or too wet.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, very, very subtle things can influence you and your team's work, you know.
And then obviously coming into things that the obvious ones is snow, frost. They can be challenging just for the simple matter of making sure the team can actually train on grass. Luckily, at the training ground, we have one pitch with undersoil heating and a set of frost covers as well. So this winter, we've not actually lost a training session with snow or frost. We've not had a lot of snow, but for some reason we've had, it seems to be a lot of frost this winter. And then other things that can affect us is pests. So you go like moles, rabbits. We have one pitch at the training ground, actually, that every summer we get wasps all over it. Ooh. And they create these little sand hills on the pitch.
Uh-huh.
They don't cause any problems to the grass, but it just looks messy. All these spots everywhere. But we've still, to this day, not found anything to treat them with, so we'll just have to put up with our our resident wasps, I think.
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually. I would never have thought of wasps being a problem. I can see how, moles and rabbits, actually, for thinking about it, could be rogue agents. You mentioned kind of undersoil heating there. I mean, I know not all of the clubs in the Pro League have undersoil heating at the moment, and that's obviously supposed to be changing as part of the licensing conditions.
Yeah.
It's a new directive that's, supposed to be coming in for next season, the expectation that all top flight sides will have undersoil heating. Do you think that's kind of essential for maintaining a high standard of pitch at the top level?
Yeah, see, I've had this discussion a few times and I never know the right way to say it, but in my eyes, I think it's a luxury. I think it's brilliant if you can have it and afford to run it, because that's the other thing. It's okay being able to afford to install it. It's when you actually come to turning it on and see the amount of gas that it burns through or the amount of fuel that it uses. I think it's great if you can afford to do it, but I wouldn't be pushing everything towards having heating. I think there's other ways, certain different covers. But don't get me wrong, I think the way it's used in England as well is they actually just keep it ticking over during the winter.
Mm.
So you'd set it maybe 10, 11 degrees. And it keeps the grass growing as well during the winter. So they don't just use it to prevent losing games. They use it as a tool, obviously, to trick the grass that it's still summertime.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, we've had it now for two seasons and it's been really good. Obviously, this year we have literally just used it for not losing games because of energy increases, as everybody knows. So we've just turned it on a day or two before the game, when we know it's going to freeze leading up to the game. And then literally as the game kicks off, we're turning it off again, which has obviously saved a lot of money. But it's not ideally how we'd like to use it. Yeah, you have to come to an agreement with the club, obviously, and make that effort to save the costs in these difficult times, as everybody's aware.
Yeah, I think that's one of the arguments that some of the clubs who are a little bit worried about the cost implications for them of purchasing something like that they wouldn't necessarily choose to kind of being forced to. It is a difficult one, that. And like you say, I think, if you use your resources right, and you have a good team around you, there is an argument that says maybe there is a way around these things as well. But it's definitely a nice thing to have, I think, if you've got the resources. Let me ask you a wee bit about the difference between kind of turf in Europe and in the UK as well. You know, is there a difference? Because I think it's probably fair to say it's becoming more and more common for UK groundspeople to kind of come to Europe, I think, and work with clubs. Is that linked to resources and turf, do you think? Or is that just about, you know, people who want that experience of, you know, different footballing cultures and how they handle these things?
I think there's a bit of both. I think you look on the TV each weekend and it's clear to see that the UK are far more advanced in pitch technology, should I say, rather than Europe. I think there's certain countries in Europe that are pretty much on par with the UK, maybe Spain, and I think a lot of Europe is I'd say 10 years behind where the UK is. I think they're just, Europe are still getting people with knowledge. I think it certainly helps with people from the UK, and even like people from America and Australia, they're making the trip over the water to Europe, whether that is just for a new experience. But I think it certainly helps with training the locals up, giving them the knowledge you know from your home country. And I've been nearly here 5 years now, and it's certainly going the right direction in Belgium. I think the standards are improving massively. You only have to look. I looked the other day at some pitches when I first arrived there, and now I look at the same ones again 5 years down the line, and you'd think it was a different place. So I think I also think it's the people higher up in the clubs that need to understand that they must invest in these things to get improvement. It's just like playing squads. You know, I think if you don't invest in a playing squad, you're not going to improve 99% of the time. But I think you need investment, and you need people, obviously, with experience and knowledge to be able to use that money wisely and invest it in the right areas in the pitch industry. But I certainly think most of Europe is still quite a way behind the UK. We have two of our staff are Belgian, and there's just nothing in Belgium for groundsmen. No qualifications or anything. We're lucky that, obviously, we're owned by King Power, the same as Leicester, and their sports turf academy at the training ground. So two of the lads have just been there for 2 weeks to do an international groundsman's course, which I think's, it's a great idea. And I'd obviously encourage anybody in Europe to go and do that course, because the knowledge there is just second to none, in my opinion. But I think that's certainly where some country like Belgium could improve, is having something dedicated to groundsmen, greenkeepers, an actual qualification that's noticed, just to get some knowledge behind these people.
Yeah, it's really interesting that, actually. I was going to mention later on, you know, bring up the link between Leuven and Leicester. Obviously, it's the same owners, and you know, you and your team must get some infrastructure support from Leicester as well, which is obviously one of the advantages of being part of a bigger network like that as well. Do you guys at Leuven have grow lights that you use at Dendrief?
Yeah, so we have eight rigs altogether at the stadium. Four bigger ones, as I like to call them, and then four smaller ones, which they benefit us massively. But again, this season, we've had to be really careful how we use them, because normally from middle of October through till now, they'd be on the pitch every day when it's not being used. But this year, we've actually managed the hours and recorded every hour that they've been on the pitch, just to see what savings we can make. But again, they're such a big help to keep that grass growing over the colder months. Just to help that recovery after games, after training sessions. They're a very big tool in our machinery list, I suppose. But we do benefit with the link with Leicester, because I think King Power have seen at Leicester, the stadium, the training ground, what can be achieved with some investment. Yeah, and then we also have four lighting rigs that we just use in like the goal areas, the high wear areas, just to help recovery when we can, in between those training sessions, just to keep that optimum playing surface as good as possible.
I think the surface at Dendriff, I mean, obviously it's a credit to you and your team maintaining it to such amazing standards. I mean, I've been enjoying for quite a while, actually. You know, you were talking earlier about sharing photographs on social media of the pitch being ready for games and that. And I really enjoy seeing those tweets, actually. And I think it's just because I've learned a little bit more about turf over the years. So I've been increasing my own knowledge about, you know, the amount of maintenance required in that. So it's really nice thing to see. I think the quality of the turf at Dendriff, obviously, it's interesting because obviously Leuven play all of their home games there. But also in recent years, we've seen the Red Devils, both the senior side and the under-23s, using Dendriff. And more recently, Union Saint-Gilloise have been using Dendriff regularly for some of their European exploits. What have the challenges been like of you know, your day-to-day job with that increased demands on the surface? I mean, obviously it's a reflection on how good a job you and your team are doing, that, you know, they recognise that there is not only a stadium that is logistically very well situated for a lot of people's needs, fans and teams, but also the turf is of a first-class standard and it's attractive to a lot of other teams to want to come and play on as well.
Yeah, I think since the day I started, so they had the Red Flames playing and the under-21s already, which is already an honour, to host them. You know, any international game, it's great to be able to say you've hosted it. But I think the more during the COVID times was the one that really, we actually had to stand back and think, wow, this is, you know, we got, first of all, the number one team in the world against my home country, England. Ooh. And to say you've produced a pitch for Belgium versus England in a Nations League game was quite an honour for me, mm-hmm. and for Luke as well, who's another English guy. But most importantly, all the team was just an honour to have. It was just obviously a shame that no one could be there to watch it. But then again, we wouldn't have had that game if that COVID didn't arrive. Mm-hmm. So it was really, really an honour. And then obviously Belgium, Wales, and Belgium versus Switzerland as well. We had, so it's quite some big games to say you've hosted, and then to get the news, obviously, and Jan was potentially going to play, or was playing Rangers in the Champions mm-hmm. League qualifier, was nice enough. But then to obviously get told they were playing all their group stages in the Europa League was just a real honour, and it was nice to be a part of, because I've never experienced, obviously, working at Rochdale and Scunthorpe, European football. So it was really good. Don't get me wrong, there were some long days and long nights, because it's not just the game, you get the training sessions as well the day before at the stadium. So it was really challenging, but a good challenge. But I suppose that it pays off for the team's work, that they can produce a pitch of such a standard to attract these calibre of games.
Yeah, it must be a real joy, that, and hopefully we'll see some more of it. I know some of the Union Saint-Gilloise supporters were quite disappointed that they'd made the switch to Lotto Park recently.
Yeah, I
could imagine.
Well, we was hoping for a big team in the, I don't know how to say it right, but to the other three teams, but, you know, a European giant as you'd say, because there were some good teams in the draw, but unfortunately we got what we got. But they're absolutely flying at the minute, and it's, I can see him going even further as well.
Yeah, that's something we were discussing on the BFP recently, actually, that they have some decent prospects to go further yet. Let's talk a wee bit about kind of your impressions of Belgian football culture kind of more generally. Did you watch much? Did you have much an awareness of Belgian football before you came to Belgium?
No. Obviously, I knew who Anderlecht was. I knew Club Brugge was. Mm-hmm. But other than that, Genk and Ghent, but some of the other teams, and the same with Leuven, I'd never heard of the place, and I'd never been to Belgium before. I came over here visiting to see if I wanted to come and work here. Mm-hmm. But ever since I have, obviously, you have to get involved in Belgian football, and yeah, I love it. Don't get me wrong, I'm a big City fan, Man City fan, and it's not the same as going watching City, but then again, I've watched Rochdale for 12 years as well, so I know about both sides of the story, but I love it now. Yeah, I'm always watching it. I pretty much go to every Leuven away game. Mm-hmm. I don't know, every home game, I have to be there anyway. And I watch other other games. Like, I've got mates who work at Anderlecht and things like that. And so you're involved in it, obviously, working in it.
Yeah. Yeah, you get to know fellow ground staff at other clubs, I would imagine, kind of quite quickly.
Yeah, that was one of the big things I was quite keen on, actually, when I first came here, because obviously I didn't know anybody. Mm-hmm. When I arrived here, was to actually reach out to these other groundsmen. And it took a bit of time, because I don't think it's the done thing here. But now, yeah, I know most of them at each team and speak regularly to some of them. So, yeah, it's always good. And I am a big fan of, you know, I might learn something off them if they can learn something off me. It's always good a bit of networking with other people in the same industry.
Yeah, I think that's one of the nice things about Belgian football culture. I mean, we were chatting about this a little bit before we recorded, how it's generally less corporate than in a lot of other countries. But I think there is a tendency for clubs on the whole to be a little bit more supportive of one another. I mean, obviously, in some cases, there are some big rivalries there still. But I think regardless of what area people work in, I think there is a closeness in the Belgian football community that doesn't exist in some other countries. Who do you like watching in terms of players, Ollie? Who have you been enjoying watching this season?
I'm a big fan of the left back at Westerlo, De Kuyper.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I haven't managed the Flemish accent yet, so. some of these pronunciations might be a bit off, but Yari Vaskaren, obviously at Anderlecht. Unfortunately, he's just got a bad injury.
Yeah,
which happened to be on at our stadium. But look, hopefully he'll be back sooner. Obviously, you can't Onuachu at Genk.
Mm-hmm.
Just scored, well, obviously until recently, he's now left, but scored a lot of goals and he was a handful. Matthew Mertens. I just like the way he runs the midfield at Leuven.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for Mandela Keita, but until he got injured, mm-hmm. just struggled to come back a bit. But now he looks like he's picking up again at Antwerp. So, yeah, there's a few names that come to the head. Yeah, I'm not going to pretend to be a Belgian football, I don't know, encyclopedia.
Yeah.
I do follow it and I enjoy it.
Yeah. I'm going to throw a name back at you that you will know very, very well, obviously, because you'll have seen him work up close. Somebody who left Leuven not too long ago, who we've been big fans of as long as we've been doing the BFP, and that's Xavi Messi, who's obviously gone to Hungary now. Absolutely gorgeous footballer on a technical level, capable of some, real wizardry. Just the way he was able to kind of move a ball, and it must have been a joy for you to kind of get the opportunity to see him work up close so regularly, particularly on turfs as good as yours.
Yeah, no, he was a pleasure to watch, and I think he's certainly one name that does stand out since I've been here. Yeah, a different class to a lot of the players in the league, and it was nice, and he was a really nice guy as well. My French wasn't the best, his English wasn't the best, so our conversations wasn't the best neither, but what we did communicate to each other, he's a really good guy, and shame to see him leave, but he's gone to a big club, and I hope he succeeds though.
Yeah, I think we all do. I think me and the guys are kind of keeping an eye on him, just because we've always enjoyed watching him play. He's probably one of the few players, if I'm honest, that I keep a reasonably kind of close eye on. Because how much enjoyment he's given us over the last few years. Let me ask you a wee bit as well about your kind of general impressions of sort of Belgium as a country. Obviously, you've had a chance to do a fair bit of travelling now yourself, having lived there for a few years, and as you were saying, kind of attending almost every away game. Are there any particular cities and places that you've sort of fallen in love with, other than Leuven, of course?
Well, I was going to say that. You beat me to that. apart from Leuven, Bruges and Ghent are the two that really stand out to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I also like Ostende as well. Uh-huh. It's not the most beautiful of places, but there's something about it that's got character.
Mm-hmm.
So I always look out for the Leuven away fixture at Ostende. I think it's because it reminds me a bit like Blackpool in the where I am. So something similar. The two that stand out for me is definitely Bruges and Ghent, just beautiful cities. And to be honest, I've been to pretty much every major city in Belgium, and
mm-hmm.
there isn't one really where I'd say I'd never go back to. I just think the country's amazing, to be honest. The people are good. And like I said, before I even came here for the job, I'd never have think to go to Belgium to go and visit or anything like that. But yeah, I certainly will. Yeah, I'm here obviously, but no, it's a great place. One I'd definitely recommend for any listeners who haven't been to Belgium.
Yeah, I would definitely second all of that, Ollie. I feel the same way about kind of lots of that, no doubt about it. And of course, the beer's very good as well. That's maybe a separate podcast, that one, isn't it? But yeah, I think, you know, I think a lot of people don't realise quite how good the beer is until they get a chance to experience it. And
it's different to anything else I've experienced in any other country. It's just, I think it's more of a passion for Belgians beer. Mm. You know, there's a different culture about drinking beer, and yeah, obviously you could talk for hours and hours on the amounts of different ones they've got. But yeah, definitely try it if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, rumour has it you're actually a decent goalkeeper. And and apparently while living in Milan, you is it right you spent 2 years at Inter's Academy, or a 6 month period during a 2 year
spell there? I think I moved there when I was 9 years old and lived there for 2 years, uh-huh, just for my dad's job. And the company my dad worked at, one of the guys was, I think he was quite something to do with Inter Academy or something. So I just went down there training for a few months. Yeah, I wouldn't say I got scouted or anything. I got told I can go down there to train, and that's what I did. Only under 10s level. But it's something nice to tell people. And I remember turning up to their training ground, and yeah, it was only to train for a few months. Nothing ever came from it, obviously.
Yeah, you don't harbour ambitions of being a goalkeeper still.
No, obviously, when I was a kid, I wanted to, like every kid, I think, who likes football, they want to be a footballer, but there's not many people who actually make it, so it was nice to have a few training sessions there, and as young as it was, but no, it's everyone's dream, I think, to be the professional.
Yeah, it sounds like a nice little adventure. You were talking earlier, just to kind of circle back to turf for a second, about, you know, how above a certain temperature is obviously a real danger for kind of turf. And you spent a period in Qatar, didn't you? And we're not that far off the last World Cup, obviously, which was in Qatar, which I think most people who probably know nothing about Qatar would say it's hot, I can tell you that much. There must be some particular challenges or for the ground staff at that World Cup to maintain those turfs, with the temperatures being, you know, well above what would be considered, you know, a level that is friendly for turf.
Yeah, I think, so just going back to the time when I was there, that was, I think we're coming up to 10 years maybe now. So I was like the deputy sports turf manager, looking after nine stadiums and around 38 training pitches for the Qatar Stars League, basically driving round to each site each day, managing a team of workers at the stadium and training ground, training them up as well to make sure they can obviously maintain turf to the standard that they required. But yeah, I think definitely the challenges for this World Cup, I know when I was there, they was literally just started building some of the stadiums. I remember seeing all the steelwork and framework go up for these stadiums. But I know most of the stadiums, they did have air conditioning inside. I'm not too sure, obviously, the routines that they were working to. But I think the time the World Cup, I think it was more like the temperatures they was getting is probably like a European sport. Uh-huh. They have big challenges, though, because the stadiums were huge, and I can't imagine there was much sunlight getting into those stadiums. Yeah, it certainly, they had to move it to a Winter World Cup, otherwise it would have never happened in the summer. For one, too hot, and the pitches wouldn't have coped. But they also use a totally different grass over there, like a warm season grasses, similar to what they use in Australia and America. So these can cope with the higher temperatures. But they just they don't look anywhere near as good when you present a football pitch than what the grass we like, the English ryegrass that is used commonly around the UK and Europe and most of the top divisions.
That's really interesting, actually. Really, really interesting. That's what I mean about coming back to, you know, I think lots of football fans take things like that for granted. They assume that, you know, it's all largely the same, whereas in fact that often it's an entirely different type of grass as well. Yeah, really interesting.
I know there was a lot of people from the UK who went over to Qatar, not physically know them, but I know a lot of UK groundsmen did. like 2 years before the World Cup to really build mm-hmm. up to the event. So no, it was, I'm sure it was very challenging, especially with the schedules again. Busy times for the guys over there.
I can imagine, yeah. Speaking of challenges, we have had a couple of rather nice listeners' questions that have been sent in for us. And I promised everybody that I would put these two to you. So let's do that just now. One of them's quite a technical question, actually, about from Angelo H at Angelo Ubel, who asks, what is the biggest challenge for a pitch when the temperature outside fluctuates from between around 15 Celsius and -4 like it has done recently?
I think it is a challenge, isn't it? I think it depends also when you have training sessions and the games, especially when it goes so cold as well. We have to plan, because it's not ideal to apply fertilizer or sprays when it is going to go so cold. It can damage the surface. You also risk of the disease pressure to go quite high, especially when it goes 15 degrees and it has been quite damp as well. So the disease pressure rises, and so you're on the lookout, obviously, for any outbreaks of disease over the surface. Training sessions for 10 o'clock training session, -4 overnight is not ideal. So it means the frost covers and the undersoil heating need to work and save us from obviously losing a training session, or for me to go into the coach's office and tell him that you can't train on grass, which is never pleasant, because obviously, they need to train on the best surface possible. And grass is what players expect to be training on. They don't want to be told they need to go on synthetic, because I know a lot of players don't like it. So it varies a lot, for especially that sort of dramatic decrease from 15 degrees down to -4, which is right. It has happened recently, which I don't know if you can bring back on global warming. I'm not sure, but it certainly seems to be getting stranger this weather, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But no, it's a good question, and one that poses a lot of challenges.
You mentioned the kind of coaching staff there. Just to take a wee sidestep, what's it like from your perspective to work with Mark Bryce and his coaching staff? Because we've mentioned numerous times over the year in the BFP that we think Mark is probably one of the most underrated coaches in Belgium. He's done a great job at some of the previous clubs he's been at as well. And he strikes us from the outside. I mean, you'll know him better than a lot of people, but he strikes us as a reasonably calm and contained individual. He's not one of those coaches who tends to wear his heart on his sleeve. Have you been enjoying working with Mark and his team?
Yeah, we work well together. Mm-hmm. He's very demanding, but then that's something I think most coaches at this level expect the best out of, not just us from a pitch point of view, but from every other staff member involved in the club. They want the best. So sometimes we have our arguments, but that's like with any football coach and groundsman, it's only for the good, though. It's not because we just want to shout at each other. These are constructive discussions, and we do work well together. But like I say, he's very demanding. But then again, I'm demanding. I demand that we have the best pitch in the country as well. So I think it works well together that we both want the best, and he wants the best for the playing squad, and I want the best for our pitches as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think you can see that, actually. I think you can see that, definitely. They've got another listener's question, because we had two, as I said. The other one's from Dan Swires. Who asks about, do you have a favourite Leuven chant? And if so, what is it?
I do have one, but I don't know the words to it, but I know it.
I won't ask you to sing it, don't worry.
No, I won't be singing it. there's a few. There's one, I think, like Leuven in my heart or something like that, with Estella in the hand.
Of course, yeah.
And then always, I think it's not just at Leuven, though. It's like we go to the left, to the right. That always gets the crowds going with the music on. Yeah, and obviously your standard ones, come on, you whites. Very original.
Yeah, you must get a lot of them kind of drummed into you, actually. Not just obviously we're working at the club, but I'm sure you come into contact with a fair number of fans as well, including some of those who are rocking up to volunteer their services to help you guys out where possible as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I just find it amazing how every club that comes to us, they always have a couple of English songs. Mm-hmm. You know, one, ones that they hear from probably the Premier League or something and then put their own words to it. And yeah, I like it. Good though.
Yeah, it's really interesting that actually, just a kind of a bit of a football history geekery, that there are a number of clubs in Belgium that obviously were founded directly and indirectly by, you know, English sports people who kind of came across. Often cricket is the starting point for this as well, where cricket clubs were formed in the 19th century, and then, you know, they became, offshoots of them became kind of football clubs when kind of coaches came across as well. So there's a really interesting link between all of those sports. I've really enjoyed sitting down and having a really good natter with you, Ollie. I've learned a lot.
No, it's been really good, and thanks for your time, and thanks for asking me to come on the podcast.
No, it's been an absolute delight to talk to you, and I know a lot of people are going to find this really, really interesting, because we've covered a lot of topics here, and one of the things that we wanted to do was certainly, you know, produce a special episode where, you know, people kind of came away from it having a bit of a better appreciation of you know, what you do and the work that goes into that. So it's been an absolute delight.
I've not bored people, so I hope they enjoy it.
No, I'm sure they will. We'll get some great feedback from this episode. I've no doubt about that at all. So that's just about all we've got time for on this special episode of the BFP. You know how to get in touch with us. You can get in touch with us all on social media. You can tweet us at Belgian Podcast. And if you do get a chance to visit Leuven, and they are playing at home on a match day, do get along to Dendrief and sample not only some Leuven action, but see Ollie's fabulous turf up close, because him and his team do a lot of great work out there in all weathers, maintaining that to the highest standards. So we'll be back with you soon, hopefully, for another special episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.